Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Charlotte Flows. And welcome to Charlotte Flows. Here we are on another week and another opportunity to step out of the doing of life and into the being of life. This 30-minute pocket of time is where I share my musings, learnings and discoveries on living life by my design, in the hope that you get inspired to ask yourself that same question. Am I living my life by my design? Enjoy the show. Well, hello, hello. Here we are into our new year after celebrating 5 years of Charlotte Flows. And I must just fill you in that to celebrate, Marina and I went and enjoyed the Wairarapa sauna project experience together. Obviously had Megan on the show a few weeks ago. It had been on my to-do list and now it is done. And oh my goodness, what an amazing experience. It was a lot of fun to go along with Marina. We suggested going together after recording that show. With the 5 year anniversary of the show, it seemed like a really nice way to do it. And what a way to do it it was. Hanging out with some beautiful ladies in the sauna, getting pretty hot and steamy, 90 degrees we got up to, and then a dip in the river. I managed in the three cycles, the first time I wasn't brave enough, but I did go in, I went halfway. But then the second and third cycle, I did fully immerse myself, totally dip. And yes, definitely benefits of doing that, and felt truly amazing afterwards and had a beautiful night's sleep. So if you haven't experienced the sauna project, I highly recommend, even in these winter months. I think there's almost something more magical about experiencing it then. But on we go. And this week, I'm really excited. It's back to reviewing a book or talking about a book and what I've learned from it. And what I'm really excited about is bringing on a friend to chat through my learnings. So last year I listened to a podcast with Dr. Federica Amati. I can't remember what it where it was, but it was she's a nutritionist, and what it talked about totally resonated with me. She was doing a podcast circuit because she was releasing a book. Everybody should know this. I have just read the book, absolutely loved it, and thought it would be great to have a chat about it. But I invited beautiful friend, fellow nutritionist, no, dietitian, I've got that wrong, Sarah Piercy, onto the show from Eat Nutrition. I did get that right after I got it wrong, didn't I, Sarah?
Yes, you did. I can be both. I can be a dietitian and a nutritionist. Oh, so you're perfectly right.
Multi-talented. because I thought, well, I said to Sarah, while I was reading the book, I just kept thinking of her because of the work she does with Eat Nutrition. I had in my head that her and Dr. Feddy would be best buddies. And when I've been making my breakfast that I've been doing for a while now, actually, one that she put on Instagram, and me and my son have been enjoying our oats, berries, chia, seedy breakfast for quite a while, I always feel incredibly virtuous. And when I have recently been seeing Sarah posting pictures of her breakfasts from dietetic conferences, I hope I've got that right, and different things, I've been like, oh, look at me, feeling with my halo glow of nutrition vibes. So welcome back, Sarah. You've been on the show a few times over my 5 years, so lovely to have you back on the vibes.
Thank you for having me, Charlotte. It's always lovely to come and have a bit of a chit chat.
So I reached out to Sarah and said I'd read the book and would she come and have a chat with me about my learnings, because I thought it'd be a nice conversation, because I didn't reach out to Dr. Feddy about it. Should have, maybe. Maybe she could have, little trio. That would have been quite fun. Hey, Sarah.
Oh, sure, yes.
But I just thought what I'll do first, and this is from the introduction of the book, and I think really sets the tone of what the book's about. And then I'm going to talk about the book and a couple of learnings and bring Sarah in. So this is what launched into the book. The food we eat impacts our body day after day and week after week, building into dietary patterns we often carry with us for months and years and passed down generations. Looking at our overall dietary pattern of what food we eat as a powerful indicator of health is an empowering concept. It is much easier to know which foods which foods to eat more of rather than focus our energy on individual meal composition and learning how to count abstract things like macros and calories. Aside from table sugar, there is no food I can think of which is fairly represented by its caloric and macronutrient content. And even with sugar, how it impacts our bodies varies hugely from person to person, and it varies from time to time in the same person. This is where I hope to bring a new lens on nutrition and health. Our life course is a marathon, not a sprint, and what we need to thrive changes depending on which mile we are running. I thought that was a beautiful introduction to what went on to be a really good read, and the book is laid out in a way that it takes you through different life stages. So like she says, we're talking about the marathon that life is, from the golden window of opportunity, the first 1,000 days and early years. It goes through roller coaster years of puberty and adolescence, the circles of life in adulting, avoiding the twilight zone, to longevity and beyond. And so I loved that the book broke it down and sort of you could, you know, for me, although I read it all because I was interested, you know, past stages, obviously, for myself and even for my son when I was looking at it from a parental lens. But what did you make of that? Like, what does that speak to you, Sarah, from that little intro?
Oh, that sounds so awesome. And I think, you know, particularly now where nutrition's become so much more black and white and quantitative and grams of this and calories of that, and we kind of can lose sight of just enjoyment in mixed meals, and that we can kind of trust maybe our intuition to have a nice varied diet and get the nutrients we need without necessarily having to do, you know, a whole lot of calculating. I think that trust often has been lost, and people feel scared if they're not doing that sort of behind the scenes work. But I also love the idea that it is quite generational, and what, how we eat and what we pass on to our children can be really powerful for them to then take on as well. And I think we all know, you know, there's been those short-term diets that people do for the 8-week bikini body. And it might be hideous to do and painful, but people do it because they want a particular result. And then at the end of it, they just go back to their maybe old ways, or they, you know, don't focus on nutrition as much. And that's not that helpful. It's what we do consistently over our sort of lifespan that's really important. So yeah, that was an awesome introduction. Makes me want to read it, Charlotte.
So I think it really did set the tone, and it really made me think, not only for myself, because I was reading it for myself, I was reading it with interest, with a lens of aging parents. You know, I mean, Sarah and I was just chatting about this before we came on the show. I definitely feel like I'm hitting, and I've had a conversation with a few friends of hitting that classic sandwich generation thing that was talked about a few years ago, that you knew you'd enter a stage of life where you were going to have aging parents and you were going to have kids that were heading into teenage years, so critical sort of times, and then you're in the middle, potentially, if you're aged in the way I've done it, in perimenopause. So you've got these three quite significant times of life going on all at once. And as we know, a woman juggling all the sort of mental load of keeping across all of those things. And so to learn about all of these different stages with different lenses in, but also, you know, definitely have that thought of big picture, sort of it's not what I'm, you know, the impact of what I've done, and you can't change anything that you've done, but you can create change going forward. And not for that, you know, like you've just said, Sarah, not take that, you know, 8-week approach of that'll sort me out. It's actually creating, you know, we say it all the time, those atomic habit styles, that consistency that will have impacts long term. And I definitely got from this that it's never too late, and that's the joy with food. We're doing it every day, but we can make change now that will actually have an impact. And she references studies and things that show that you can make change now for the future, can't you? So, which is incredibly liberating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're producing new cells every single minute. So, you know, we're always producing new parts of our body, and so we want to fuel those new parts well. So yeah, it's never too late to make a start. And I think going back to your sandwich generation comment too, this is quite I say it's a newish thing. In terms of human evolution,
yes,
the sandwich generation has really only been around the last couple of decades, because before that time, our life expectancy meant that we didn't tend to have those children at home and parents. So it's all quite a new thing that's going on. And then sort of throwing into that, as you say, the perimenopause and the working and the stresses. So, yeah, it's difficult. Even our grandparents wouldn't have had that experience that we're having.
No.
So it's been a pretty abrupt change in that whole scheme. Yeah.
And just adapting, and we know we're adaptive beings, don't we? But what this book was highlight, and that I guess, you know, is all in the title, everybody should know this. And I read it thinking, gosh, you know, teenagers, you know, everybody should be reading this book. This should be, you know, I get all preachy then. This should be in schools and everybody should be understanding this, because I'm gutted that I'm only picking it up at 49 and really getting my head round this. And then it makes me question, I did learn a bit about nutrition and the, you know, the triangle back at school, you know, as limited as I can recall these facts. But I wonder where that sits now and how people, unless you've got a personal interest, that, you know, and the way diet and supermarkets, and there's a lot about this in here, and the food industry and the impacts that's made, and, you know, industrialization and all of the things, you know, we kind of have a grasp of loosely. But where is the learning unless it's self-motivated? Do you have any thoughts on that, Sarah?
Yeah, I think I don't think there's an awful lot being taught in schools, to be honest. So I think it, you know, does come down to a bit of parental guidance. I think a lot of the education for people is popping up on their feeds on social media. And the problem with that is you can have people that really don't know what they're talking about, but are very good at marketing and can be sharing stuff that perhaps not super accurate, but it's quite believable. So, and you don't have to go too hard to search for that. It's just being sort of landed on your feed, as opposed to maybe yourself, where you're sort of searching out reputable sources and reading books and things. I think it really is up to the individual, you know, where they're getting that information from. And without sounding like a conspiracy theorist or anything, I, you know, I don't feel we can really trust food manufacturers that much to be doing the best for us. You know, they're wanting to sell products, they're wanting to make profit. You know, they're substituting perhaps ingredients that we would have in our pantry with these very cheap products, which are barely foods. They've been, you know, manufactured in such a way that they create, you know, a mouthfeel or something, but they're not, you know, true great nutrition that we would have had as a whole food. And they just slap a label like high protein or, you know, something on it. And so we just, you know, so much of our diet or our food intake these days is we're busy. So we're grabbing stuff and we're trusting these food manufacturers where, yeah, I don't know that our interests are always sort of with them, really.
It's
so it's,
hard,
it's
isn't
tricky
it?
Because
it's so hard because you're short on time, short on capacity, short on budget.
Yes, totally. All of those things.
Yeah. It's
and you're at the supermarket just trying to make your budget go further, and you've got, you know what your kids like, and maybe the food's been engineered in a way to be really appealing when it comes in a certain form. And so, you know, the kids are wanting that, but actually, you know, just going back to basics and giving a kid a carrot to munch on before dinner or, you know, that sort of old school stuff is still really useful to draw on today, I think.
And I think that comes through in the book as well. It's that, you know, we do know it. If you know, it says a lot, isn't it? If you think about what your grandparents eat, it's, you know, eating at what is it? I can remember one phrase about eating around the edges of a supermarket, because it's the fresh meat, the fresh fruit, the dairy. It all tends to be on the outer walls of the supermarket instead of the aisles. And you know, I keep coming back and constantly thinking of all those years ago when I first met you in my early days in the Wairarapa and Toy Library, and your ingredient list, like we were looking at what to look out for on boxes of food and ingredient lists to go, you know, it's just that kind of mental sort of, is it real? Do you understand what's in it? And if not, then alarm bells, hey.
Yeah, but also absolutely, and I totally agree with that sort of outside of the supermarket, but unfortunately that is expensive these days. And your budget doesn't really go as far, does it? So we're sort of, you know, having to bulk up with other foods and just some of those things. Not everything in the middle of the supermarket's horrendous, of course, but yeah, it's just having the understanding and the time to check some of those things maybe.
Yeah, being a bit more up to speed on what are the things that are good and what are the things that we should avoid. Yeah, totally. And yes, not to demonize anything or, you know, it's tough out there. You know, I'm constantly looking, and we talk a lot about this, you know, you've got a budget and you're trying to do the best. You're trying to put good food on the table for your family because you understand that it's important, but it's getting harder and harder and harder. And like you say, just, you know, the food industry, you know, has great marketing behind it, you know, and you can't always trust it. But back to the book. Let's get back to the book before we start getting out the pitchforks. I'm going to, just because obviously age and stage, I'm going to reflect on this bit that is in part four. It was avoiding the twilight zone, building your health span. So this was where, when I got to chapter four, you know, it was where I was sitting in this life. And I'm just going to read just a little bit from the entry point of this thing. I can't help singing Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer in my head when I think about reaching 50 and midlife in general. It's such a catchy song, definitely not written about midlife, but it conveys this message that you're actually only halfway through and also that you've already made it halfway there. What a joy to have reached this specific point in life where you have already been through so much, but still have so much to look ahead to. This time of life is known as midpoint, midlife, but I've also heard it referred to as the twilight zone and even sniper alley, which is quite terrifying. The reason for these names is that often this is the age when more people in our lives start to die, not from car accidents or from awful early onset cancers, but from diet related diseases of aging, preventable things like heart attacks, type 2 diabetes and strokes, 80% of which could be prevented with diet and lifestyle changes. And if that isn't a little like, holy heck moment, what's your thoughts on that, Sarah?
Yeah, that's quite sobering, isn't it?
It is, you know, yeah, and I think a glass of wine.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'm doing some work in a public hospital now, and so I'm seeing a lot of, you know, these conditions in my face and in younger people. And look, some of it's unfortunately a bit of a sort of luck and health roulette. You know, we see people that live very healthy lives and unfortunately get struck down young with something, and vice versa. We see people smoking and drinking and they live to a ripe old age. But for, you know, the majority, we are seeing that maybe not making the best choices with regards to food and lifestyle does start this chain of events, which, you know, can start with sort of inflammation and then move on to either cholesterol level issues or blood glucose level issues. And the problem with a lot of these things is they're really happening under the bonnet. So you can be quite blind to it. You're not necessarily getting symptoms, but stuff can be occurring. And, you know, I guess as humans, if we don't feel something, we can just sort of ignore it and assume we're all good. You know, some people do have signs and symptoms and just pass them off or, you know, choose to ignore them. But a lot of these things, you know, diabetes in particular, it's called the silent killer. And that's because things can be going on in the body and we're not feeling them. Whereas if we get, you know, some simple routine blood tests now and then to kind of see how things are tracking, looking under the bonnet, it can give us an idea of how our body's functioning, and we can, you know, that might motivate us to make changes more quickly if maybe we're not doing as much as we could. But equally, if we can, even without checking under the bonnet, just, you know, start to think about following a good healthy eating pattern, like a Mediterranean type diet, which, you know, I can talk more on if you want to, or getting that regular exercise in, you know, watching things like smoking and drinking, managing stress, all those things can have a big effect on our body. And some of those sort of inflammatory processes or body processes might have started back in our 20s, 30s, you know, some of them are 40s. So the sooner that we get on and start to make some positive changes, the less likely they're going to sort of build and build and cause irreversible issues.
It just makes you realize how interconnected, and that is, you know, highlighted in the book as well, just how amazing our bodies are, but how we take them for granted for such a period of life, I think. And then you, unless, like we say, unless you're reading books and diving a bit and going, heck, there's, you know, there's things I could be doing, which I think is great, that can have quite a big impact. But it's also, you know, your own advocate, aren't you, with your body? Nobody else is going to come and save the day. You've got to be doing these things, like looking under the bonnet, doing, you know, we take our cars for a warrant of fitness, but how often do we, you know, do those? I know we've spoken about this before on the show. Go and have that blood test check to just, you know, make sure it's on your file, if nothing else, that that's where you sat at that point in time.
Because the thing is if your car blows up, you can buy a new one. But you can't do that with your body. And, you know, a lot of what we need to do to eat well is so ridiculously simple that we might not bother doing it because, you know, like it literally is eating some more fruits and vegetables. You know, we might know it, and so that almost feels enough that we're educated on it, but we actually need to action it, and we need to do it regularly. You know, like we might, I guess so much of the time, wouldn't it be great if we could eat just this one incredible meal and it lasted 6 months in terms of its health effects, but it's just a constant that we need to be consistent with. And that can be a little bit boring for people, or, you know, it's fine if we miss a couple of days here and there, but then sometimes a few missed days, you know, of nailing those fruits and veggies can go on for weeks and months. And, you know, before we know it, even though we know what we need to do, we haven't done it. Yeah. And I think it's the actioning that,
Well, that's been a roller coaster. Let's take a wee musical break, but we'll be back for more and talking a bit about that, investment, and a bit about the Mediterranean diet and how that can be such a neat tool. So enjoy this and be back soon. So I'm loving this conversation, Sarah, and I know the second half is going to evaporate. And there's so much to talk about. We might have to get you back on the show after you've read the book, because I'm handing this to you after the show, and we can reconvene when you've had a deep dive and see where we get to. But I loved you brought up the Mediterranean diet, which I'll talk about in a second, because that is one of the reasons that I thought, oh, these two would be best buddies, Dr. Fedi and Sarah, because the one thing that she keeps coming back to, and she'll talk about lots of different things, but she advocates that the Mediterranean diet is the one, like, so sort of researched, proven, overall thing that does seem to have a lot behind it to suggest that that is a really good model of how to eat. So we'll touch on that in a moment, Sarah. But I just, you know, what you just said at the end there about it can be boring. We know it's simple. It is just more veggies, more a carrot before dinner for the kids, not the bowl of chippies. And it was so funny because this whole thing made me think about, I've been talking a lot on the show about money this year, and I've talked about the compound effect and understanding that. And whenever I'm listening to the finance podcasts I listen to, it is all exactly the same. It's consistent habits done over a period of time that has big impacts on long-term health, wealth. And it's exactly the same. There's an invest in your wealth section here. And she references, as soon as I become aware through my education of the compound effect which lifestyle and behaviours have on outcomes, I started to adopt a different approach. And yeah, I think that just in essence pulls all of that together, doesn't it, Sarah? It's just, it's really simple. And so that gap between knowing and doing is crazy, because we eat every day, we shop every week, we do this continuously. What is it that is the barrier to us just totally getting it?
I know. I think maybe as humans, we are sort of designed to love brand new shiny things.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, maybe, you know, the old message is just a bit dull and boring, and it feels like if we're using a protein powder, or, you know, we're using some expensive vegetable, maybe that will give us the edge. Whereas, you know, it truly can be as simple as just adding an extra spoonful of veggies onto the dinner, or taking a piece of fruit for you every lunch. I know, like, often there's some fruit in the fruit bowl, and so often we leave it for the kids.
Yeah.
And I know I sometimes too, and just not take a piece of fruit with my lunch. But it's just little things like that, that you just commit to doing that habit. And it can be very seasonal. So don't go buying expensive things. Just, you know, whatever's in season, or whatever you can forage, if it's feijoa season or whatever. But, you know, just make that commitment to sort of, I guess, habit stack. You know, you're taking a lunch anyway, just grab a piece of fruit to go with it, or you're cooking up some veggies, throw in some frozen peas or whatever. And it doesn't seem like much, and it seems very boring, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's all positive additions that you're doing that can make a big difference down the track.
Yeah, just so simple. So let's, like, when you look at that, then those daily habits, and let's just touch on at the end this, the Mediterranean diet. Just give us a, you know, when people talk about the Mediterranean diet and it being such a great, and I know you advocate for this as well, what is it about the Mediterranean diet? And in a nutshell, what is it?
Okay, so the Mediterranean diet is really what people were eating in the 1950s and 1960s in the Mediterranean region. So I'm not even sure that necessarily the true Mediterranean diet is happening today in those areas, just because of the advent of ultra-processed foods and fast food. So it's not just Italy. It's, you know, people in Spain and Greece and Turkey and Syria and Northern Africa, but they all kind of had quite similar themes with their eating, even though they had different cultures. So they had a lot of seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. They had things like extra virgin olive oil, which is an incredible oil full of antioxidants. They ate legumes, so they had things like chickpeas and lentils and butter beans and cannellini beans. They were coastal, so they ate quite a lot of fish, particularly things like sardines and anchovies, which are oily fish and are very rich sources of omega-3 fats. They did eat some dairy products, but it was mainly lower fat, like Greek yogurt and ricotta cheese. They had grains, they had nuts and seeds. They just ate less processed foods and more foods, you know, how it appears in nature. Not a heap of red meat, but certainly some. The order of eating was quite an interesting one. You know, they might start their main meal with a salad, especially sort of bitter greens, and then move on to other parts. And we know that that actually has a really good impact on our blood sugar levels, the order of eating. And I guess too, just their whole lives was sort of around movement. You know, the goat farmer was walking up a hilly crop rather than, you know, taking a quad bike. Connecting with family and friends, not many rest homes, you know, people live together. There was just sort of, it was a whole lifestyle. And I think we've seen a lot of really good research on the Mediterranean diet, so I'm definitely for it. But I also don't want to poo-poo other traditional diets. So, you know, someone living in Japan, we're not saying they have to not eat their traditional diet and instead eat like a Mediterranean. You know, we want to look at each individual culture and their traditional diet because there's generally positives in a traditional diet, no matter where
Where
it's
you
from.
are. Oh yeah, and I would agree with that, hey, because if you're honoring where you are in the world and your history, and you know, there's, I think that almost is kind of part of it, isn't it? Sort of looking back at how things have been done. Seasonality, you know,
Absolutely.
things like that.
So that's kind of your Mediterranean diet in a nutshell, I guess. The big parts that are eaten in quite large amounts are the extra virgin olive oil and the oily fish and the fresh fruits and veggies. Now, those things are all not particularly cheap, so they can be a little bit harder to manage in this current economic climate to a degree. But you know, we can certainly use aspects of it. And you know, with oily fish and things, you know, there's tinned fish is absolutely fine. So sardines and, you know, tinned salmon can be just as good as fresh. But it's just, factoring those compounds, those different elements of that diet into your own eating pattern where you can is a good idea.
And I think just it's like you say, it's little things like that salad. And I can remember reading about this and thinking that's so simple. And I remember going to Brazil with one of my best friends, and we always had a salad before we had the meal. And I thought that it was the first time I'd experienced that, but it was just really refreshing and like a palate cleanser. And then you'd have your rice and meat, and it was just it was really different to me. But I was like, this really makes sense. It's really nice. So I really
And
like
it makes a really nice occasion of it too, doesn't it? And I'm sure they did do it for the blood sugar control, you know, a banquet.
And that was culturally just what happened. And I was in an environment that was, you know, very traditional, I guess, to a sense, and loved it. So, I mean, I think for me, it's just the one thing that you can do is the veggies. And even if it's not the most exciting veggies in the world, like, you know, sometimes I pick up a bag of carrots at Pak and Save and think, and broccoli, because they're on special, and think boring. But actually, if I'm loading up on these things, and you know, carrot and hummus is a go-to snack in our house, it's not all bad, and maybe that's enough. And
Yeah, absolutely.
you
And
know.
you can make things more exciting. Like I sometimes roast carrots. And you know, you could do a wee drizzle of honey and a bit of sumac, and then you could get some Greek yogurt, add some spices and put the carrots on that with some almonds, and suddenly you've got quite a beautiful Middle Eastern dish, but the actual ingredients are not necessarily super flash. So but then not everyone will feel like doing that either, you know, just peel a carrot.
And just
Too, to have a, you know,
or have it
crack it in your
warm, so you
lunchbox.
don't even have to cook it. So I think sometimes there's just a few little tools of, you know, just having a couple of options to do it can actually just be as simple. So then if it is carrots again, because they're on special again, it's just finding a few different, and is that the challenge? Find something exciting to do with the carrot. something new to do with it. So you can have the same things, but just reinvent them a little. You know, I can often find myself, I was searching up the other day because I'd bought some red cabbage. I was quick, easy red cabbage recipes and got into a little rabbit hole. And sometimes it's as simple as that, but maybe if that's the way that you get more veggies on your plate, it's not all, doesn't have to be too complicated.
No, and even like frozen too, I'm a big fan. We know variety is really important, and like the number of different plant foods is great for good gut health. And so, you know, if say frozen stir-fry veggies are on special, sometimes you can pick those up and they've got a few different veggies in them that you could just throw into a stir-fry or something, and you know that you're maybe getting four or five different veggies in there. And if you've managed to get it on special, it's going to last in your freezer for ages. So yeah, different techniques work for different people. And I think although legumes are strictly considered a vegetable, they're a really great plant food full of fiber that can help bulk up a meal as well. So whether that's adding some dried red lentils to some mince bolognese, they're cheap as chips, or some tinned legumes to, you know, a salad or something. There's, yeah, lots of different ways to try and get more whole plant foods in. Trying to do it in a cost-effective way for sure.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I've definitely found myself, and maybe it was after reading the book, but just, yeah, definitely picking up tins of, yeah, the beans and legumes and stuff. And although they would, you know, would often just sit in the pantry. So again, that sort of doing an action, you know, buying them is one thing, you actually have to open the tin and eat them. Just finding that I am just throwing them in to anything, like, you know, some mince and veggies and, you know, throwing those in or a stir fry just to make it, you know, go a bit further. But actually it's working really well. And yeah, so it's finding, you know, like you say, what works for you, super simple little hacks. But it's, you know, I'm just like, if you're going to be scrolling on your phone, do it for the good, like find some good hacks and recipes that are going to support you in this way, because I think this is way more important than funny cat videos, even though there's moments in there that they're obviously appropriate.
We need them sometimes, don't we, right? We need that sort of escapism.
The show has evaporated and we've even gone over, I feel, but and we haven't even got to the gut biome, Sarah.
No, the good news is the veggies and the legumes and the piece of fruit at lunch, that all is going to help support a healthy gut biome. So it's not like we need a whole lot of different diets for different things going on. If we just try and nail a couple of aspects, it helps all sorts of different things in our body. So, kind of buy one, get three is
get
quite
the
handy.
Power of three. I love it.
And yeah.
Sums this up. I'm just going to, right at the end of the book, there is the final word section. And I just, this sentence, like as Sarah's just said, wraps it up beautiful. Understanding the fundamental role that nutrition plays from the moment we are conceived to the moment we pass away is an exciting and empowering tool. As soon as we appreciate the power of food to make us feel better, perform better, achieve more, and genuinely enjoy life more, our relationship with our diet changes. So true. Hey, Sarah.
So true. So true. And interestingly, the diet word can be quite triggering for some people. But, you know, what she's meaning by is our eating pattern. So it doesn't need to be a short-term diet per se, but diet is just another word for eating pattern for people sort of working in this area. So I know that it can be a bit triggering for some people, but it's not intended to be used in that way that you might think, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, thank you for that. Because, yeah, and I guess that's another sense of how society has driven a word into something that's, you know, then in this context of it being how we eat, a change of how that's perceived. Thank you for coming on the show, Sarah. We could have chatted for hours, I feel, about this. But I think after I've handed over the book and you've had a read, maybe we do return and have another chat on what you think and what your takeouts were as a person in the industry and who works with this every day. If you're keen, I would love that to happen.
I'd love to.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely. And I think, you know, like I said at the beginning, we can't all hang out with Dr. Fedi Emati, although I'd recommend if you've enjoyed things we've said, hunt her out, head nutritionist at Zoe. So that's a handle on Instagram where I follow her. But Sarah Percy, Eat Nutrition, right here in the Wairarapa, definitely follow her too, because the things, I just feel it's a mirror, and Sarah's right here on the doorstep and does some amazing work and is available for us to have on hand. So thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Charlotte. It's lovely to be here.
And we will look forward to chatting again, hopefully sometime soon. But for now, thanks as always to Arafen for hosting the show. So thank you, and speak soon.